is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud and selling climate change is the big story here. So you can package this up many different ways here, starting with the coverage of Hurricane Dorian. Is anyone tired of hearing that one yet? That has been blasted here from sea to sea here for the past couple of weeks here. And then, of course, one of our most popular conversations and well-read articles on the platform, using children to promote climate change, was a big story we're going to cover. And an interesting twist on I'll plant the seed with you now, global cooling. What does that really mean? We'll talk about that as well as this town hall extravaganza, maybe? I don't know what you want to call it, that CNN had on the airwaves, where they had the top 10 Democrat candidates talking about that. So as you can see, there's a lot packaged in this climate deal, people. So brace yourself for that. A lot of top stories here. We'll start with China here. And let me bring on here Dennis Santiago. Dennis is an American strategist, a philosopher, patriot, a hellraiser on strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, and global stability. And actually, Ava is a political commentator, radio personality, and she is an author. Her books are on Amazon and on the America Out Loud bookstore, where you'll find all the books for all of our experts and guests who are on our platform, friends. All right, U.S. and China. Can we all agree at this point that China does not want a President Trump after 2020? I mean, is that a fact or is that a fact? And so the trade talks have been back and forth. Dennis, what's happened now is every time they've been off, the markets have been going crazy in anticipation of what will happen next. In the meantime, China says they're going to come back and talk. So it's pretty clear at this point, I think, to everybody that China is not looking for a Trump administration beyond 2020. That may be the impetus as to why they keep falling down on these trade talks and really don't want a deal here. Dennis, are they serious about this when they come together next month, or is this just another way to extend it for the markets to stay positive? Because they're hurting economically. Well, the whole world is hurting, actually.
Yeah, the whole world is actually hurting economically. You have global recession fears that are out there. You have global slowdown in employment. You got the U.S. having the only positive rate on interest out there on its treasuries. Everybody else is running negative. So the world is in weak condition, and the U.S. is relative to the rest of the world in a very strong condition. I think these guys are serious about negotiating. And to your point, I'm not really sure that they want to see anybody other than Donald Trump in a post-2020 environment, the way the world is developing. I think they're also realizing that the time to play political games and posturing games is coming to an end and everybody has to work. And, you know, quite honestly, from a global stability standpoint, I'd rather have players that are cogent than players that are trying to learn on a job that may not know what they're doing. It could be very, very bad if you got people that are kind of like wander around. I don't think the world actually has that luxury right now.
Oh, you're sounding far more optimistic than I thought you were going to about China. I am blown away with your response there. You really think there's a strong possibility they'll come together, you're saying, and that they may want a Trump administration. Ava, do you believe in any of that as well, or do you believe in the fairy tooth godmother or any of those, the Easter bunny?
I'm going to pop your happy bubble right now, okay? I think Xi is looking over the landscape right now, and he's praying to some kind of communist god that Donald Trump never gets reelected. He's going to play the long game, I think. I think he's going to be very, he's going to play this game, this footsie game that he's been doing with Donald Trump. He'll say that he wants to talk and then pull back. And I think what's happening in Xi's mind, I'm trying to kind of channel his thoughts. Mm-hmm. And you have to think like a communist when you do this, which is very difficult for me, but they're brutal people. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching what took place in Hong Kong. And I know all of the Chinese people on the continent of, you know, China itself, they're looking at the island of Hong Kong and they're thinking, wow, these people are very brave and they're standing up and they're fighting. And now that the extradition treaty has been pulled back, the people are still protesting. And I find this very interesting. They want freedom in that country. They want more freedom than they have. And you know how that goes in a communist country. You know how that ends.
That's right. Yeah. Eva, you really jump right forward with it. That's perfect, because that's what I suspect here, Dennis. I find it very rich that, okay, so they got supposedly what they want, the protesters, with the extradition bill being brought back. Carrie Lam would pull that out. But that doesn't seem to be what they want after all. They're still, in fact, the protests are getting, they're getting more ugly as it goes here. This could be a tipping point for Hong Kong, no?
Yeah, I think it is a tipping point for Hong Kong. What you're seeing here is also the same tipping point that you see in the United States. Once people start to protest, it takes on a life of its own, okay, and it takes on a bizarre life of its own. So even if you finally do win the what you were asking for, the momentum is such that you start to ask for stupid things and things that are beyond what your opponent can give you, and it's going to end badly. I mean, it'll end badly in the United States for people that are pushing things too far too.
Yeah, that is perfect. I agree with you. That's well said, because I think they're pushing now just to get more. It's getting silly now with what's going to happen, and that could be some real lashback coming from China. Before I leave this topic here, it's interesting, the setup here, what you both have been talking about here. You know, Eva, with what you were saying a moment ago, I want to think in this terms a minute here, back to Xi Jinping. You know, what are the alternatives beside a Trump presidency? Well, you'd have somebody from the Mickey Mouse Club. It would be one of the socialist Marxist people that would be run. And I started to think more about that. And Dennis, to your point, you're saying, well, you think they're ready for serious talk. And if they really are, then we'll see soon enough. We'll see within the next many weeks if they are anywhere near serious. It is a bit of a footsie game, as Eva had put it out there, with what Xi keeps doing with this. And I think he may be delaying the inevitable. But Dennis, if they're looking for world domination, which every expert believes they are, and let's face it, you don't really want calm in the global program at that point. So at that point, if one of these socialist Marxists got in there as president, and they got in some of those policies, they would include in the climate one, which China knows is a big joke, I think that would give them a major upper edge to really pull the wool over everybody's eyes. Talk to me.
If the administration's changed in the United States, it gives a definite advantage to the Chinese from the point of view of they can continue to play their agenda in the world, and the United States basically becomes neutered. The danger for the Chinese when that happens is an ineffective United States causes other parts of the world to start to assert themselves in ways that are chaotic. And then you have the problem of, geez, is China really ready to step up? They're not really set up to be the global policeman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that may not be, but I think they're reaching pretty far now. And as you said, Eva, they played the long game really, really well. But we'll see. There's something interesting with this whole China thing right now. We're seeing it bubble up like we haven't seen before. And I think this trade thing is just one more thing to bring them to the altar quicker, sooner, faster. But Trump is reading the cards and the tea leaves, I think, fairly well on this one. We'll see what happens. Another one that we need some new tea leaves on is Vladimir Putin, by the way, and Russia. Mm-hmm. And this is interesting because, again, we have done an incredible job of pushing Russia away and pushing Vladimir Putin away. As Vladimir now is turning all of his might to really military force. which is always a bad sign when you see that happening. So now he comes out this past week and he's producing new missiles. And this is after the demise of the nuclear pact on the intermediate to range missiles. Former CIA officer Mike Baker says there's no anti-missile system that could stop the next generation of operational hypersonic cruise missiles. This is a tit-for-tat game that is really ratcheting up here. Ava, speaking of Vladimir Putin and Russia here, I mean, again, we've done a pretty bad job here in our country, I think, with trying to keep them close. And I know you and I have talked about this both on and off the mic here, but I think this is going to be a problem. And I think Vladimir Putin is stretching his muscles right now. This is not going to bode well for global peace, I don't think.
Actually, past presidents going back to, you know, George W. Bush and Barack Obama and so forth, none of them have really had a good relationship with Russia. And we should have a good relationship with Russia. And you ask why, because they're technically a communist nation. However, Russia is exceeding our capacity right now with these missiles. They've now created a hypersonic weapon designed to attack aircraft carriers and other well-defended targets, which gives me a little bit of a pause. They're also creating cruise missiles with a nuclear tip warhead on it. Mm-hmm. And these are cruise missiles that we can't, they fly at a lower altitude. Dennis can probably speak to this much more technically than I can. But all I can tell you is this. It's something that we can't prevent right now, and it gives me great worry. I think Russia should be a close ally of America because they've changed a lot over the years and their economy and so forth. They would benefit greatly from being an ally of America, yeah. And America would be very wise to keep them close.
See, a lot of people would hear what she just said, Dennis, and think that's a bunch of rubbish. They would think there's no way we're going to have a close relationship, or when you use the word even ally with the Russians, you can't even kind of put that in the same sentence, Russians, Americans, and ally.
The whole thing about the Russian weapon systems upgrades is that, you know, they've had cruise missiles for a very long time. They've had hypersonic missiles for a very long time. What they have now is that all of those old systems are obsolete, and they, unlike us, where we are still in a stage where we can product improve our weapon systems, they're at the stage where they need to replace them entirely because those other weapon systems are now woefully obsolete. So that's what they're doing. If you also look at the strategy that Russia is following, their weapons that they are emphasizing developing right now are not aimed at the United States. They're aimed at the European Union, which at this point consists of all the former NATO countries and all of the former Warsaw Pact countries. So the Russians are feeling boxed in from the West, and they're reacting to it by doing this. And basically, in order for them to improve their position vis-a-vis Western Europe, they have to abrogate a treaty with the United States. And that's kind of what's going on. It's important for people to look at the dimensions here. In this case, the United States is not the center of the world for the Russians right now.
So there's some tough challenges ahead for Russia. But clearly, one last thought to this I'll leave everybody with. America has far more in common and can pursue some sort of relationship with Russia than we can with China. And that's just a fact, people. And so to that point, I don't think our politicians have done a very good job of working forward to that end here. Another big story here these past couple of weeks here, I've been seeing these markets, some supermarkets and some of these drugstores like Walmart, CVS, Walgreens, Wegmans, asking customers not to openly carry guns into their stores. And they're coming right out and saying that. And it started kind of as a trickle effect. Initially, I seen Walmart come out with it and saying they don't want this in any of the states, people bringing them in there. And a lot of these stores, too, as well, are starting to pull bullets off the countertops and pull weapons off. And there was announcements of that as well this past week. Avril, I think this is kind of the entry point now to retailers striking back, thinking they've got to do something that what they think is a gun problem. This fits into a bigger narrative, doesn't it?
Yes. At first, I was a little bit alarmed to see that, you know, they wouldn't be selling, you know, ammo and so forth and handguns or whatever. But then I thought more deeply on the subject, and I realized that a lot of, you know, small business owners will benefit tremendously from this this kind of thing.
How's that?
Well, I buy my ammo, and I buy it, you know, at the cheapest place I can get it. So there are other places around here that I can get it, and they'll probably match the prices for me if I ask them to. So I would rather support the small mom and pop places than the big box stores.
Interesting observation. So you see this as maybe an opportunity for the smaller ones, as you say, and not as much of a problem that these.
And as far as people openly carrying, I think they're going to have to make an exception for law enforcement people that are on the job, mm-hmm. and they have to run into Walmart to get something, or they have to stop at CVS or whatever. Yeah. You know, I don't think they're going to take their weapon out and, you know, lock it in their
car. Yeah, I've even seen messages they're trying to stop them as well. That's a great point you bring up, Ava. I've even seen points
to
that.
Actually, about carrying concealed, I'll be honest with you, I've never openly carried. I always carry concealed. You never want people to know. You never. Not if you're really smart.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the definition of it, clearly. Mm-hmm. Dennis, is this a problem with these stores and everything falling into line? Are you concerned at all, or do you see this as an opportunity for these other small retailers, maybe?
Oh, mostly I'm just in love with Ava because she knows how to buy ammo at the right place.
There you go.
I love it. Open carry does cause quite a bit of triggering in the people that are not part of the gun culture of America. These are psychological reactions more than they are actual reactions.
That's true. That's true.
I see somebody open carrying in a store, and I go right up to them, and I go like, "Hey, that's a neat looking revolver. Where'd you get it?" And then you start up a conversation, right? You know, because it's another reason to interact with somebody else on a random basis, and it usually winds up being a really good conversation. You know, people are nice if you give them the chance to be. But we live in a country right now where taking up the position of saying I'm going to be nice to somebody that I meet randomly on the street is just not something we do. We've learned bad habits from the internet. We carry it off into our real world, and it causes problems. These stores are reacting to it basically because they don't want to see a drop in traffic in their stores. And to Ava's point, big box stores are not where you want to get your supplies because they are not the best deals in town.
Michelle and Barack Obama, the former president and first lady. Well, you probably know at this point, they have a deal with Netflix. They've had for some time, actually, where they were set to produce a series of films. And you may have even watched some of these films. I don't know. American Factory, Crip Camp, Listen to Your Vegetables and Eat Your Parents are some of the fabulous movies they've created there with Netflix, evidently. And so now they're on to another one here that I think will get your attention potentially here. They're set to produce a series about the Trump administration. And this will focus on the dysfunction and in the Trump administration. They have acquired the rights to the book there, The Fifth Risk. It's into a series, and it's going to be a series, actually, as part of their multi-year deal with Netflix. This book, Dennis, was authored by Michael Lewis. It's a New York Times bestseller, and it gets into the whole dysfunction. And here's what's ironic about this, guys, is that one of the things that this Lewis points out is that, oh, my God, Trump got all kinds of people in the administration. They weren't professional politicians. People didn't know what the hell they were doing. And he asked the question, Dennis, this. He said, "What?" And listen to this here. In the book, this is kind of an open statement he puts in there. What are the consequences if the people given control over our government have no idea how it works? That's the question he put out there. Wow, boy, is that rich, Dennis. And you say what, sir?
And I say, hey, Barack, I mean, you know, you never figured out how it worked either, okay? Nobody knows how it works. I mean, you know, Obama was the one that was going like, you know, we're just caretakers here. You hold down a job for a while. They also did a film, I think, American Factory, where they were picking on Trump.
Yeah, that's one of them.
Attempts to reinvigorate the Rust Belt and basically poo-pooing it because these are lampooning the efforts of the administration to improve things in the United States basically for political gain. And what's the point of that? I mean, you know, he's trying to take down the guy that he did not want to succeed him because he's afraid of his own legacy. So he's taking it out in Hollywood. And by the way, you know, Barack's now up for an Oscar because American Factory is in fact a film and it qualifies for Oscar category. You want to take odds on whether or not the Academy votes for it just because?
Well, I will take odds, sir. And he'll probably win it, just as he won the Nobel Prize before he came, as he was coming into office. Remember that, Ava? You know?
Yes, of course.
He'll win this, I think, no doubt here. So what do you think? Fifth Risk, Undoing Democracy. Big October 2020 surprise, Ava, or what?
Oh, no. I think, you know, Netflix is trying to make money. And, you know, this is all just what, you know, it's what Netflix wants right now. They want an audience that's going to watch this junk, and it's not going to be me, of course, but I'm thinking after Donald Trump leaves office, once he finishes his term in 2020, so in 2024, he may be getting a show that will be explaining some other things. So you might want to think about how Netflix is doing this. They're playing one group against another, and yet they'll benefit in the end. You
That's
know?
Ava, that is so perfect. I got to tell you, I thought of that, I swear to you, the other day here, that when Trump leaves office, when that happens, the opportunities for broadcast or whatever and that are going to be tremendous. I actually thought about that. And there'll be a deal then at some point as well. I don't think it'll be with NBC this time, however, but it will be with somebody, I am sure. Listen, I want to throw in the last story here, and the top stories here is this New Mexico restaurant, which I am anxious to visit, or I was going to see about having an Uber Eats delivery here. If they'll deliver this far, I'm not sure. But they've got a hell of a menu here. Lock Her Up, No Collusion, and The Wall are a few of the names of the burritos. And this restaurant, by the way, is in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Dennis, you've looked at the menu. What do you think?
I want a fake news taco, baby.
Fake news taco.
Or a bad hombre taco. Because you know they're gonna go through quick. Okay.
Yes. Well, it's called Urban Taqueria, right?
Is that Urban? Urban Taqueria. It's owned by a guy named Hanif Mohammed, who apparently hates Donald Trump. Absolutely hates him. And his rationale is it creates conversations on the issues of the day. Here's my real impression.
Do they have food fights in there, Dennis? Do they throw the food at each other?
No. What's really interesting about this thing is, so like this guy, you know, he's reacting in that Arabic manner of, if you don't like somebody, you throw shoes at them. That's what the guy's doing, right?
That's true.
So he's, what's interesting though, is that the people that are being triggered by it and complaining about it, at least in the area, are all of these white intellectuals, you know, college professors and stuff like that. And they're going, and they're just all over the guy, beating up on him. And so I'm looking at this thing and I'm going like, well, there's an example of white privilege against an immigrant if ever I've seen.
Oh boy. You know, when you were saying white intellectuals, I was thinking for a moment, Ava, that would leave you, Dennis, and me out of that conversation. So what do you say to this?
Oh, I don't consider myself to be an intellectual, let alone white. I mean,
exactly.
He knows how to buy ammo.
Yeah. So what do you think about, they have one also, Ava, called the Immigrant, a taco called the Immigrant.
Well, I think this is brilliant marketing, let me tell you. And, you know, the gentleman, my hat's off to him for this. I mean, you know, he's creating something different, and, you know, I just think it's wonderful. Capitalism.
That's well said. And it is true, as Dennis was saying, he's an immigrant from Kenya. He's a Muslim. And as he said also, he hates Trump. But I love your response, Ava, which really brings back what we're trying to do, which is have a little bit of a conversation. He has civil discourse, and it's all good. So if the guy makes some money, it's called capitalism, and we want to eat his tacos. The main thing to ask yourself is, do they taste good? That's the real question. If they are, whatever that you call them, we'll probably eat them, because you can never replace a good taco place, people. I want you to brace yourself, because you're going to learn some stuff just ahead, and you'll learn a whole lot, actually, about what global cooling actually means. But selling climate change, using our kids, big conversation coming up next, friends. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. It's all the rage. It's really selling climate change and what's behind all of this. Now, you've seen this also, this town hall extravaganza that CNN put on. Quite something. They had their top 10 socialist Marxists. I mean, Democrats. I'm sorry. I do that a lot, people. But they had their top 10 on there talking about the world was going to end again and how they can package that to sell so they can win the White House. My friends, you cannot make this stuff up. Well, let's get on with it here. Welcome on. Dr. Jay Lair is here. Dr. Jay is a regular here. He's a senior policy analyst with the International Climate Science Coalition and the former science director of the Heartland Institute. Welcome on, please, for the first time to our program. Dr. Joel Glass is here. He's an engineer working in the field of infrastructure for ultra-cold climate environments. He has a book out that's called Ice Age 2025, How to Prepare America and Your Family. Of course, this goes right into the face of the global warming conversation, so I'm looking forward to this conversation. Welcome to you both here. Hey, I want to start, Dr. Jay, and talk about this Hurricane Dorian. You'd have to be living on a far away planet not to know about this Hurricane Dorian. The coverage was amazing. And I'll tell you, it was hard to follow it, but the forecast didn't seem to be all over the place, and I just didn't know where this thing was going to go. I don't think anybody knew. It was a little over the top, I think. Some people found it a bit obsessive. What's your take on this?
Well, what I thought mostly about Dorian, Malcolm, is that people with common sense would recognize that their estimation of where that hurricane was going to go and how big it was going to go was changing by the hour, and they were virtually never correct with any three-hour projection. Within a three-hour period, things changed. And what I hope would occur to the American people, really the whole world, Joel is up in Finland as we speak, is that we are unable to accurately predict things that go on in nature. And the idea that these climate alarmists think they can tell us what the temperature of the planet will be 10 years out, 50 years out, a century out, should occur to the average person. It's absolutely absurd. And everything they do with climate change alarm should be absolutely discounted. So I love the fact that the study of Dorian showed we don't have the capability of doing that. And happily, all the mistakes were in the right direction, which is to say they thought it was going to decimate Florida, and it never even hit land in Florida. It's certainly causing damage as a storm as it moves up the eastern coast of the United States. But certainly, I think I'd be accurate to say it's as tenth as a bad as they originally thought. So I hope that the knowledge of how wrong we were hour by hour with Dorian will turn out to be a positive in making people wake up to the absurdity of the climate alarmism.
Joel, you know, you're hearing Jay there talk about the fact that they never had this storm right. They never were able to get the predictions down. He's very accurate. I mean, for the most part, people felt it was going to decimate Central Florida and come across the land there into possibly the Gulf of Mexico and hit Louisiana. The thing never was even close, but this is how these storms are. They're about impossible to totally forecast. But I like Jay's point that when he says, how are we going to forecast 100 years from now, 50 years from now, 5 years from now, or next month when we can't even get the next few hours straight? Is there something to that?
Well, Jay is absolutely right and on target, as usual. And the NASA made a statement within the last week, I don't know the exact day, that the climate models of the United Nations are totally inaccurate. There are many reasons, but the main reason cited by NASA is that it is impossible to model clouds, and clouds are a major factor in climate. So it's not only tornadoes we can't model. As Jay said, they can't model anything and project the future on these models. Most of the projections are made based on computer models, which they've already proven to be quite faulty, but they're still presented to the public as something that is very accurate and infallible, but in fact, it isn't. And the tornadoes, Jay is absolutely right. I hadn't thought about it until he mentioned it just now. But even for an hour or two, they could not project where it was going. It's just simply too complicated. For one reason, it's made of clouds to a large extent, and that's something they can't model. Another reason is that the weather around it controls where it goes to some extent. It's very complicated. If there's a high pressure zone to the north, which there was at the beginning, it stalled it over the Bahamas. And it's just simply too complicated.
Tom Harris and I published an article on your site a few weeks ago about modeling and how terrible it is. And not only, as NASA pointed out, they can't model clouds, I listed in the article 12 variables, which common sense would say have to be part of a mathematical equation that supposedly simulates how nature works. And we don't understand most of them. Cloud certainly leads the way, but we don't understand the relationship between the ocean and land. We don't understand the relationship between land and the atmosphere above it. We don't understand the role that vegetation plays in the Earth's temperature, and things more complicated. There's a relationship between the fact that the core of the Earth, which is molten, and the crust, which is hard on the surface, do not move in sync. I mean, there's actually variations in movement. At the bottom of the ocean, there are plates that are moving. All these things affect the thermostat of the planet, and we don't know any of them. And as Joel said, the models are essentially a joke, and it's wonderful that NASA is now admitting this.
Just seen one headline just yesterday. Tomorrow's doctors will diagnose the mental toll of climate change. And it goes on to say a growing number of schools are beginning to introduce a curriculum that promises to help America produce its first set of professionals trained at schools to identify and address this crisis. So I see nothing but trouble here, because now we're bringing it into the schools and we're creating a bigger problem out of something that is not even really a part of the problem. So let's talk about that next here. Both of you gentlemen co-authored a very, very interesting article, which I have to bring to everybody's attention, because it was one of the most well-read articles this past month on AmericaOutloud.com. And it was called, entitled, "The Disgraceful Use of Children to Promote the Climate Change Delusion." Let me get Joel first to chime in on this, Joel, about this first of all, the article itself, you talked about using children to promote the climate change, that it was a crusade built on fear and brainwashing children, sending them to the front with protest signs and so on and so forth. You made an interesting comparison, too, back to Ball. Talk a minute about that message, if you will, about using children, Joel. Will you please?
I think it's an act of desperation on the part of the climate change movement, which is actually... and Jay has mentioned this many times himself, that it's not actually about climate at all. It's presented to be about climate, but it's about political power and controlling the economy, the way it's structured, controlling the government. It's a method to force changes to occur very rapidly, which wouldn't occur otherwise, moving it towards socialist authoritarian. It's actually driving people to give up freedom. That's the purpose of it. They're getting a bit desperate because nothing has happened despite billions of dollars poured into the movement by the United States government. During the Obama administration, there were funding decisions made which allot billions. I couldn't believe it when I first read it, but it's accurate. To fight climate change during the Obama administration, billions of dollars yearly were set aside for this, and the military was made part of it, and NASA was made part of it, and it's all a hoax, the purpose of which is to panic people to give up their liberty to be saved from a non-existent threat. And children are easily, at this point, the children are being brought into it in ever-increasing numbers because they're desperate. They haven't succeeded in making the political breakthrough they wanted. That's the objective now, is to mobilize a new group of people to be very afraid, just as you mentioned, Malcolm. Instilling fear in children is their objective at this point.
Well, in the article Joel and I wrote, Joel did a good deal of research, and he went back into biblical times and found a civilization called Baal, B-A-A-L, in which children were used to sacrifice in order to get the gods to improve things going on, the weather, particularly the crops and things of that nature. So the point being, it goes back millennia, thousands and thousands of years, in which children have been used to as pawns to scare the public to gain control. They did it thousands of years ago to impact their gods. Well, they're doing it today to impact the public, to allow government to run their lives to a much greater extent in the future than they have in the past.
Listen, that article we're talking about right now, people, that Dr. Jay Lehrer and Dr. Joel Glass wrote here, co-authored, is you must read it, okay, number one. It was highly charged, the article was. It fired up people from both the left and the right, quite frankly. There was a lot of commentary we've seen about it, and people were pretty juiced about it for whatever reason. Because, you know, when you're talking about children, it's a very sensitive subject. And so people were very, well, let's just call it out loud about it, so that's fine. It's called The Disgraceful Use of Children to Promote the Climate Change Delusion. We'll make sure that's readily available for you to read there on the platform when you listen to the show here on Talk Radio here. I got to tell you, Jay, Joel, I learned so much from you guys every time I have you all on, but this is the first time Joel has been on, and I just want to tell folks that Dr. Joel Glass is out of Finland. This, in his book, as I stated to you up front, is a must read for folks, called Ice Age 2025, How to Prepare America and Your Family. And I have to say to you, the explanation, as you agreed with Jay, that he just gave moments ago about how this is being used, that is a message I just have to say to everybody. I pray that you will not only listen to that message, but that you will circulate that message to everybody, because he put it out there very well, the power that they're seeking, what they're up to, and why this thing is, it's a crisis, all right. It's a crisis of the biggest kind, and it's a mental crisis that is being put onto people from power seekers. And just remember that, people. I'm telling you, this is going to really come back to be a pivotal point just ahead here. All right, Joel, I want to talk to you now about something that I think is quite ironic here now. All right, so follow me on this, please, Joel, and then I need you to take the baton and make sense of it, because this is certainly out of my expertise, but it's not yours and Jay's. And here it is here. So for some time now, for some years, this thing had been called global warming, that the earth is warming, we're all going to die, we're going to burn up in a fury, and on and on and on. And this was the hype that Al Gore and company started some years ago. And it built to a feverish pitch, and then the political operatives, as you stated moments ago, grabbed onto it and made a big business out of it, made a lot of money as they fly around in their fancy private jets and their private yachts, and they suck up all the fuel they can in the fossil fuels, and they politicize their garbage out there. So here's the thing. What you're saying, Joel, is in the direct opposite face of these lunatics, because you're talking about global cooling.
About the global cooling, again, I'm going to refer to Jay, because I saw an interview he did a couple of years ago in which he made clear that the primary, or actually the only influence in a major sense of climate on the Earth, we're talking about major issues, is the sun. And after listening to that, I started becoming more and more focused on the solar minimums and the projections that NASA was making, when they were going to occur, because during a solar minimum, it gets cooler. This is when the sun cools down. And it happens every 11 years or something like that. But the projections of NASA and another projection by the best person in the field, her name is Valentina Zarkova. She's a professor in England, and she has a team that concentrates on the sun. And they have been very, very accurate in projecting when the solar minimums will occur and everything about them. In fact, 97% accurate. And what they have projected is that between 2020 and 2050, at least, we're heading into a cool period when the sun cools down. And when the sun cools down, so does the Earth. That's the basic reason. The idea that carbon dioxide is having an influence on the temperature of the planet is absurd. It's the sun. It's not carbon dioxide.
So what we're talking about here is we actually need more carbon dioxide, Jay, than we need less. Is that correct?
Well, it is correct. And what Joel just said, and the Russian lady teaching in England and her team, there are virtually no serious scientific climatologists that wouldn't agree exactly what Joel said, that between 2020 and 2030, the amount of solar radiation coming from the sun is going to be declining, and there is just no question we're going to cool down. Not to a point that we have to be scared that it's the end of the earth. In Joel's book, Ice Age 2025, he spends a great deal of time talking about how one can adapt to a cooler climate, and we are going to have to do that, but it's not a fear kind of thing that the global warmists are putting forth. The one good thing about the cooling and all the things Joel said is that it may finally be the end of the global warming alarmism that's trying to scare everybody to death so that they'll give up their personal freedoms and let the government control.
But Jay, it's not going to end the climate change scare, though. It may end the global warming, but not. They already changed the adjectives in the words, no?
You're right. What you're about to say, I was going to say, is they'll figure out some way to make the cooling something to scare us with again, as Joel said, to get rid of capitalism and have a more socialistic form of government. So you're right. We're never going to beat them. They're just going to change topics as they
You know, go. Jay, there's probably a business opportunity for you, Joel, and I, combined, the three of us, could start a joint company and build igloos, and probably make some money there, buddy. I mean, that could be good. Hey, AJ, speaking of that, the crazy insanity, what did you think of this, Jay, this CNN 7-hour town hall event, which I admit up front, I did not see a second of it, but I have read the backstories about it. And we're going to have a panel discussion up next year. Did you watch any of that? So you didn't waste your time on that, did you?
I did not, but there was a complete transcript of it. And a good friend of mine, Craig Itso, who runs a carbon dioxide website of all the good things about carbon dioxide, he actually read the whole transcript and wrote a massive article about it. And it's sad. I know from a TV standpoint, it had the lowest rating of any major program ever, so people did not watch it. But every single one of the Democratic candidates that went to CNN and spoke for 30 or 40 minutes, each one of them said something to the effect that global warming was an existential threat, that it was worse than any world war. It's the biggest thing man has ever faced. It's absurd. It's crazy. What I'm hoping is that just the publicity about it will wake up the common sense man and woman on in our country and in other countries as well, to know how nutty these people are, and give our President Trump another 4 years to try to right the ship.
Well, as I said, they're now in the classrooms. And as I said, they have stress classes about it for mental disorders and what have you. So this thing is getting a feverish pitch here. All right, so what I want to tell folks right now is that, well, first of all, Dr. Joel Glass's book, Ice Age 2025, How to Prepare America and Your Family. And he just gave you a cliff note of that, basically, with the sun cooling. Isn't it sad, people, that they can't come to power with honest means and to deal with some of the real problems that people face, but they've got to use drama like this. I mean, there's something sick about the whole thing.
I think they're evil, Malcolm. Pardon my French, but I think they are evil. It's a battle of good and evil. It's been going on really since the world began. But evil has gotten the upper hand on this issue, and we've got to defeat them.
In fact, I was thinking about playing ping pong with a polar bear. Maybe that would keep me busy here. So, more Viewpoints in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
The question I always get asked is, where do I get the energy from? Well, keeping up with Malcolm Out Loud is no easy task, friends, even for Malcolm. Well, you may know that I've personally been taking Healthy Cell for some time now. Well, the great news is Healthy Cell has a new type of natural supplement called the Nutrition Gel. So no more hard-to-swallow pills. The good taste in gel can be mixed into smoothies, yogurt, or water. These gels provide maximum absorption of essential nutrients, and it's healthy for our gut, not abrasive like pills can be. You know, it's time for all of us to go pill-free. And you can try it with a free 2-day supply. Just cover $2.95 shipping, and the company, Healthy Cell, will cover the cost of the product. Go to healthycell.com/outloud, or simply click the Healthy Cell logo at the top of AmericaOutloud.com. So as I promised you all here, this CNN's climate town hall, which I clearly had not been following. And how do I know that? Because it had happened already. And my esteemed colleagues had said to me, well, have you watched the, did you get any part of that town hall meeting, Malcolm? And I said, what town hall meeting? What are you talking about? The climate one that CNN put on? No, I'm not familiar with that. What is that exactly? Well, I'll tell you what you'll learn in just a moment. Let me bring on first two of our distinguished colleagues right here. And please welcome on here, Jim McKay is here. Jim is a political analyst, a commentator, radio producer here at America Out Loud. He has a 30-year background in global technology and telecommunications. And Arnetta Notkin is here. Arnetta spent 30 years working on Wall Street. She's a producer and commentator here on America Out Loud. Jim McKay, I've got to tell you, that is one buildup to a program that I miss. Now, I know you watched some of this, did you not?
Till I fell asleep. Boring. So nothing we haven't heard before was put onto this thing. And when they're just talking about who can outspend who by how many trillions of dollars, there's nothing, not a single word of reality was spoken in 7 hours.
Now, what you just said with how they can spend trillions of dollars, that's interesting. Was that the biggest takeaway from the day?
Well, I think the biggest there were two really big takeaways. One, that none of the candidates really outdid themselves. And Biden, who has been the leader of the pack, just, he was, I hate to use the word crucified, by a question from, I think it was a student from Columbia University about his next day meeting with a major stockholder in a natural gas fracking company. And Biden had no comeback for it, basically.
Now, they had the 10 candidates there. I guess they faced off. But what I heard as well, Jim, is Cory Booker came in only in the last half hour. Is that right?
Yeah, he showed up 30 minutes before things wrapping up, you know, and he really missed an opportunity to get on stage. But I think he's going to be gone from the podium by the time they run the next debate.
And now he wants to be known as a Trekkie, so he's going from Spartacus to Trekkie. Is that it?
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. Well, the one who got the most time, I understand, was Elizabeth Warren. She got like quite a few hours, I read somewhere here. Now, Arnetta, I know you had to have watched every second of this. I know how much you're into this sort of a conversation. Tell me, please, what's the outcome?
All I can say is, when I heard about it, I did not watch it. Thank the Lord for whoever invented the DVRs. But
you didn't
I did
waste
not.
7 hours of your life, you mean?
No. And so I thought, okay, then 7 hours when I heard about it, I thought, what hissy fit are these Democrats now going to pitch? And then I thought about it further and I thought, you know, they're script writers, and that's what this was. Mm-hmm. Scripted. They have script writers. They've been busier as they say in the South, as a one-legged cat in a sandbox. And they're trying to sell us the same thing over and over and over again. We're supposed to be underwater since 1960 or 70 or something like that. And it just doesn't happen. And so there's another saying in the South, ain't no education in the second kick of a mule. So if we haven't learned what they are up to, meaning the left, the globalists, these people, and again, people call them dumb and stupid. They are not. If you think they are, then you're the one that is going to be totally shocked when they take over the world. You've got to pay attention to what's going on. Ask yourself, what are they trying to hide?
So when you say, like, okay, a lot of people turn, you know, don't pay attention, but yet there are a lot of people. I mean, for a network to dole out 7 hours of precious airtime to anybody is amazing in itself. But to do that on one topic like this, the problem is there are people who are believing this, are there not, that are indoctrinating themselves in this?
Absolutely, Malcolm. Absolutely, and that's what's so scary. Mm-hmm. They are out of the closet. Again, they're in our face. They are brainwashing our younger generation. It is, if you're not scared already of where their agenda is going, and that is control at all costs, what does that mean? They are willing, someone said in that debate or in that discussion that the climate change is a $17 trillion market industry in the world. So where are they going with this? And the young people haven't gotten kicked by that mule yet. They are buying it. They are emotionally involved with it. They are scared to death. If you're told that the planet has 11 years to live, that the planet is going to be destroyed in 11 years if we don't make these drastic changes, including becoming vegetarians. Young people are not equipped with life experiences to understand that it's manipulation, greed, and power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There is a theme here, and it is the power seekers that are after that, that power, and they leave no stone unturned, really, as they continue to go down this road here. It's hard to believe, Jim, that I tell you, I really am, I still have to say to you, I'm surprised and shocked that we're speaking about this in such terms here with this whole climate change conversation already, because I never expected it to get to this, to be a high talking point in a general election. Clay, I want to read you, Jim, this here, Wolf Blitzer, who did, again, he was one of the, I guess, he was the guy who, I guess, coordinated this whole thing, right? The head guy, Jim?
Yeah, the first moderator up, and he was pretty much behind it at CNN, from what I understand.
Yeah, he says, Jim, he says, this is an important evening for all of us, is what he says to the people there, evidently. And behind Blitzer, they describe it here in the article, was a panorama of Earth that a hot blue dot with a thin haze of atmosphere, our protector, our smotherer, arching across the stage. And the Post goes on to say the audience was made of Democrats and independents, and of course socialists as well, I'm certain. I'm adding that in there, but you know there's got to be a lot of those in there. Young activists from the Sunrise Movement, there's a group, Sunrise Movement, to college students and what have you, whose pressure on the media and politicians precipitated the town hall meeting to put this out there. But it was a retired teacher who asked the first deadly serious question, Jim, and here it is. Is it fair to expect our children to reproduce given the climate chaos that awaits them? And how would you answer that, Jim?
Putting it in that context, if we only have 11 years to live, the first thing I do is I'd go out and buy a new car, and hopefully I can get the first payment scheduled 10 years out.
That's a good point.
I remember years and years ago, people were doing things like that during the Cuban Missile Crisis. The world was ending in 10 days or 2 weeks. There's going to be a nuclear holocaust. People went out and spent money like there was no tomorrow.
Oh, they were doing that at Y2K as well. Remember when the computers were going to blow up the world? Yeah.
Yes, the world was ending.
Yeah.
And And when you start doing this to young people, whether they're high school or college, or even if you start introducing these type of subjects to elementary school kids, they found that during the 50s, when they were doing the duck and cover nuclear explosion, end of world kind of crisis, kids were going home in crisis, that they were 7 and 8 years old because they were practicing hiding under their desks from a nuclear bomb, which would have obliterated the entire school anyway. But it's the fear factor. It is what it is. And they're trying to use a fear factor to swing an election, which is, you know, it's actually deplorable.
Well, do you think this could, I mean, is there, I mean, what's the sense of this at this point, Jim? Does any of this work? I mean, could it work possibly? In other words, can they convince enough people that there is this massive crisis that is hitting the planet? I mean, is there any remote possibility that could happen?
Sure. When you look at the 2016 election, right, Trump won 3 critical states by a total of 77,000 votes. 77,000 votes out of 126 million cast is infinitesimal. So if you can convince 2 or 3% of the people that this is a valid issue and that the only one that's going to solve it is Bernie Sanders, mm-hmm, if he gets the nomination, it could do things, you know. But I don't think any of these 10 last candidates standing, so to speak, have a chance in 2020 because they have no other platform other than fear right now.
Well, interesting. But however, Arnetta, I don't think people can take that for granted. Obviously, Jim puts out a great argument there, which I really appreciate when he says, well, in other words, it only takes a few people to change the entire trajectory of an election or a race. And that kind of happened in the 2016 race, because without those votes, as small as they were in those states, a Trump would not have won the White House. It would be President Hillary Clinton. And
absolutely,
few people can change the trajectory of a race. So that's the risk here, isn't it, Arnetta?
Absolutely. Look what happened to California and Orange County. And right now, I just read an article that climate crisis is what they're calling it, is going to be the top issue for the candidates in Orange County in 2020. So it's setting up a trap also for the Republicans to poo-poo or make light of the fear of our younger generation and our Generation Z and millennials if we act as if it's not important and everybody, what the left has to say, is discounted or just a pile, then the Republican candidates, just as the abortion, extreme radical abortion issue, is going to be a deciding factor. It is truly setting traps for conservatives and Republican candidates. And they're, they can swing the vote. They've got the votes, particularly if we, baby boomers and the others who assume, and you know what assume means, that Trump's going to win in a landslide. That's so you put these factors and voter fraud and the control of the voting process in probably up to 20 states by then in the hands of the progressives, the globalists.
So what we're saying here is the risk is real. As you hear Arnetta speak and Jim, the risk is real. And you can never really take anything for granted specifically. Just when you think it's going to go one way, people, you can have the carpet pulled right underneath your feet out and you know where you'll land. Correct? Yeah. And that's what we're dealing with here. It's anybody's guess what's going to happen here. It's just we continue to bring it here. And we thank you for being part of the journey here, friends. As always, it's time to get involved and get loud.